The Big Red Couch, a podcast about making role-playing games. A group of GMs and players draw ideas from the mystery box and bring their game pitches to you.
Good day, listener. Welcome to episode 72 of The Big Red Couch. Today on the mics we have Craig.
Hello.
And Ben. Hey. And the prompt for today is esoteric support.
Which comes to us from Chris K, possibly against his will, and certainly outside of his knowledge.
How does that make it a suggestion at all?
Well, basically, it was something he said, and I wrote it down because I thought it would make a good card suggestion. But at this precise moment, I cannot remember whether I actually checked with him.
Right. So less of a quote and more of a misappropriation.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, at this point, it's basically blatant IP theft.
Right. So it's entirely taken out of context. Well, fair enough.
Yeah. I have two ideas for this.
Ooh, it's an embarrassment of riches.
Yes, yes, we do have some audience suggestions as well, but I have two alleged ideas for this.
Mm-hmm.
How about you?
I have something that resembles an idea, so lay on, what have we got?
Well, much as with last time, where I had a sensible idea and a slightly sillier idea.
That worked well.
Indeed, yeah, the slightly sillier idea came to me courtesy of a Facebook image where somebody had basically mocked up crystal knuckle dusters.
Right.
Quartz crystal knuckle dusters for when somebody needs their chakras realigned and shit.
Right, yes, I believe I've seen that.
Yes, which then put me in the mind of a kind of a film noir mob and mobster kind of environment, except with a bit more of a woo twist to it. So, yeah, you've got the whole thing of, yeah, we're going to go in there, we're going to change his mind. Currently, I think you're going to find that his earth chakras all messed up, but Swami Knuckles here has a way of sorting those things out.
So we're talking about bootleg homeopathy.
Not just homeopathy. I think there's room for Reiki healing, chakra realignment, aromatherapy. It's a whole mixed bag. I just rather liked the idea of this support crew of muscle and persuasion experts who work in a very alternative manner to achieve their results. That, and I like the idea of some overly muscled person with crystal knuckle dusters and a beatific expression named Swami Knuckles.
Fair enough.
And who knows? Maybe they do help. I mean, maybe it's not a question of, oh, we're going, they don't look at it as, we're going to hit the store owner until he agrees to pay us protection money. It's more a case of, we're going to realign the energy flows of his body until he understands his role within the context of society and the community and the world. And this is why he should pay us protection money.
Hmm.
Yeah, like I said, it was a sillier idea. I'm not sure really where you go with that, other than possibly as something you drop into an existing game for light relief.
Possibly it's in a world where these forms of alternative practices are perfectly valid, but they're so densely supplied that you really need to distinguish yourself, so they've kind of come across this mafia theme. Because I've seen IT supply websites, you know, pest exterminators have all adopted this kind of, yeah, pizza joints obviously kind of adopted this kind of thing, and that's just a natural progression.
Interesting.
Not a game though, it's like marketing treatment.
Yeah, but it can be turned into a game. You could have some fun with that one, as if you were doing your kind of your crime story noir settings.
Hmm.
I mean, I know there is a Deadlands noir setting out there by Pinnacle Entertainment Group. Yes, there is a Deadlands noir thing out there that I know almost nothing about, but I have got to assume that Swami Knuckles and Co. could fit right in there.
Hmm.
So that was my sillier idea.
Fair enough.
How about you?
Actually, I'd like to hear what your slightly more serious idea is, if it's even vaguely adjacent.
Very vaguely.
Mm-hmm.
This one was based a little bit more on the support, as in the calling in support in a more tactical and military sense, and mm-hmm. kind of date back to some ideas traded around with some people a number of years ago about what has been called the Boxer Rebellion or the Boxer Uprising
mm-hmm.
in China. Effectively, depending on who you believe, a rabidly xenophobic, anti-foreigner and incredibly violent uprising of brutish and brutal peasants who objected to the Western and non-Chinese powers moving into China.
Being all civilized and enlightened and shit.
Yeah. Or if you go to the other extreme, a bunch of people who actually didn't much like the idea of a bunch of foreigners invading and then telling them that they were in charge now, or somewhere in the middle. But in any case, the idea at the time, which was at least partially based on a Tintin comic, or at least information gleaned therefrom, and partially based on the belief that because of their righteousness, the foreign weapons would not harm them. This kind of got morphed in conversations with people to the idea of, okay, supposing you've got these European forces on the one side, well, European plus Japanese forces on the one side, and this local uprising on the other. One side believes they're completely invulnerable to the foreigners' bullets. The foreigners don't believe this. Shots are fired, and it turns out that in a few cases, the locals were actually right.
Even if it is in a very, very limited number of cases, this does raise interesting questions.
But it was kind of the projection of, okay, so what might happen from there if you didn't want to go into a full-on horrifying war scenario if both sides actually stopped and had a bit of a think? And what it might look like if you had a team up between a squad that's made up of a couple of Royal Marines from the British Navy and a couple of the locals with effectively spooky kung fu powers.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, I'm kind of imagining a circumstance leaning heavily into the wire foo territory and maybe reaching into the movie Equilibrium, where you had the gun foo thing, except in this case, what you've got is some reasonably well-trained soldiers with guns, some martial arty types who, if they can get the chi balance right, can do awesome stuff working together.
Hmm.
I think there's some interesting stories to be told there. Plus, it's kind of an interesting setting because your time period of kind of 1880s through to about 1900, 1910, that kind of time period, an awful lot of weird stuff was going on geopolitically. You could have a lot of fun with that.
Mm. Science is a blossoming but dimly understood, and all sorts of crazy things seem possible. And yes, yeah. it was a tumultuous time, as you say.
And the idea of this, the players as this squad of people, where you've got half of them are just extremely well-trained, classical soldiery with rifle and a bayonet and sword, and the other lot are well-trained masters of the physical mystical arts, who under the right circumstances can be bulletproof, under the right circumstances can do that jumping across rooftops stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But only when they've sort of got all the ducks in a row. I have no idea what the system would be.
It would have to be a little bit specialized in terms of this sort of bullet prevention kung fu technique, so that it obviously doesn't sound like something that is just a use once a day, or it's like a random chance or anything. You've got to be aware that you are in the right place to deflect bullets before you do so.
Yeah.
Fate could probably manage it. That sounds a bit like a stunt.
Yeah.
A pretty good stunt, but yeah.
Although, I mean, the reason I brought up Equilibrium is that they had the whole gun-fu thing and the putting yourself in the position where you have the maximum amount of field of fire with the minimum exposure to risk.
Yeah.
Except in this case, it's the putting yourself in the correct position to bolster your chi and potentially to drain theirs.
Hmm.
Sort of positioning them on the blade of the knife and thus disrupting their chi so that the guy with the rifle can shoot the bugger.
Okay, so it's like a multi-party, sort of like the Dune shielding principle. The idea that you have to get through the shield before you can attack the foe, and the other conventional weapons of the era, the lasers and so forth, interact messily with the shield, so you can't just shoot.
Indeed, that sort of thing. And I liked the idea of the sort of forces from both sides working together in a squad, because that's just a little bit interesting.
That actually sort of crosses over with another meaning of support, which is a bit more contemporary.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of online games, there are support classes. And these come from, and that extends into role-playing games and so forth as well, the people who do healing or buff or debuff the various sides of battle are often referred to as, you know, a support class. It's very big in the MOBAs and League of Legends. I personally play support
Okay. Quite
a lot. And the idea is that while your carry, the high damage output guy, who's generally a little bit flimsy, is harvesting, is doing farming, basically taking out the enemy minions as effectively as possible, doing as much damage as they can to the enemy carry. You heal them, you disrupt the enemy carry, basically try and make their job as easy as possible. So it does sound a similar sort of thing. You have asymmetrical party abilities, and you know, there's lots of games that are built, I mean, D&D has more and more strongly moved towards a model where you've got specific roles, you know, people accused 4th edition of being World of Warcraft, but with dice.
Wouldn't go that far from the limit, but from the limited playing, there are some valid points of comparison there.
Certainly the party role thing is very much, people talk about, you know, DPS and so forth, damage per second. If you're looking for it to be a tactical game, and it sounds like from the whole, the idea of, right, I'm going to disrupt the enemy martial artist's chi flow or distract them by getting into combat and then throw myself to the ground so you guys can musket them to death.
A little bit, yeah. I'm not thinking full-on tactical war game, and I'm certainly not thinking, well, here's the computer program that we're using to model the flow of chi.
Some people would get so erect at that thought, but...
Part of this conversation came out of me trying to figure out something to do for a master's thesis in geography.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. It did eventually get squelched because I went to university at presumably the only university in New Zealand that had somebody who'd already written a book on geomancy.
And yeah, that's something that with today's focus on, you know, job skills and getting prestige for a university probably wouldn't fly. Actually, I might have been part of this conversation. I know that I've always pondered the idea of like a tactical magical game where the levels of magical resources or mana would vary across the map, and part of the tactics would be to try and take the magical high ground or rearrange the mana flows as you complete your battle. And it sounds like the kind of bullshit we might have talked about at university.
It seems entirely likely. Yeah. I mean, this guy was a lecturer in human geography, but he'd done a book on, it was specifically to do with selection of grave sites.
Okay.
The sort of geomantic rules and traditions surrounding that.
And that must have crossed over a bit with Mr. Vampire and so forth, and this discussion about the dragonfly graves and so forth.
Yeah, very much so. And actually, yeah, now that you mention Mr. Vampire, kind of the more I think about this, the more I imagine that this esoteric support squad of a couple of European soldiers and a couple of the locals effectively being brought in for really weird problems. Like, we've got a vampire on the loose.
Actually, the hungry ghosts, the hopping vampires of Eastern mythology would be an interesting thing, because, you know, that would be, we are political enemies and adversaries, but this isn't good. We should probably deal with this.
Yeah. That was kind of where I got, I went from there. Yeah, Fate, it's a reasonable catch-all system. There might be something better. If there is, I'm kind of hoping that an audience member will write in and tell us, because I'd be genuinely curious.
I like Fate because you wouldn't actually have to make a totally gonzo chi balancing mechanical system. You could work off of your, do you have enough resources to power this stunt? No? Well, you better take some negative aspects to put yourself into the right place to use it.
Yes.
That's a fairly good way of managing that sort of thing.
Ah, so you're effectively hitting the other guy with consequences along the lines of standing on the knife edge of the chi.
Yep.
In order to be able to... Okay, I get it. Yeah, nice.
And it's the kind of thing where you can't just go, I ignore your bullets, I ignore your bullets, I ignore your bullets. It's somewhere where you actually have... You can do the bullet ignoring thing, but it's going to cost you. And it becomes less and less reliable as you get more consequences on you and so forth. So it, rather than it be, I could use it 3 times a day, it's like, yeah, we should probably slow down now. It's starting to hurt.
Yes, I am using this thing a lot. Sooner or later, that's going to catch up with me.
Exactly. And it has the sort of, and it's not just like a purely mechanical pull. You can do something that, you know, you can draw on your inner resources and your character's history and so forth to augment that sort of stuff, rather than just being a use once per day, deflect bullets with your sleeves.
So, yeah, that's That was my more serious idea.
And indeed, well, it had wide-ranging...
The artwork would be fantastic.
Oh, yeah. That would be awesome.
The cultural appropriation would also be fantastic.
Isn't it always? Why do you think people do it? It's a brilliant idea.
Laziness?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
We're looking at you, J.K. Rowling.
Ouch.
You've not seen what she's been up to recently.
No.
Omg.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been a thing. She did a magic users in America kind of thing, and kind of just Native American beliefs are a bit like this, aren't they?
Oh dear.
Yeah, it was pretty. It was pretty low effort on her part, considering someone who clearly put quite a bit of thought into the English public school system with magic. Yeah, she could have tried harder.
I think once you've made yourself a billionaire and then donated your way out of it, maybe the pressure's off a little bit.
Yeah, not so much. Though there's been helpful conversations with people about how actually not to screw it up this bad, especially if you're not a millionaire. So that's good.
How not to screw up cultural appropriation is always a good thing to know.
Mm-hmm. Right. And yes, so speaking of cultural appropriation.
That always goes well.
Indeed.
I have a good feeling about this, listener.
Actually, it's not quite there, but let me know when I cross the line. My idea is pretty much the obvious one.
We've established that the obvious one varies from person to person.
I know.
The obvious one for esoteric support for some people could be some sort of athletic protector with runes on it.
Wow.
No one?
No.
None of you? Really? Okay. Just me, then. This is awkward.
All right.
My search history is never going to be the same now.
Clearly. Runic jockstrap does sound like something that they would put out in League of Legends, so...
they market it under the Hammer of Thor brand.
Right. Excellent. Okay. As I say, mine's the obvious one for me.
Okay.
You're on a help desk, working for a labyrinthine organization, which is basically Scientology, or Nerve from the Evangelion series. Some world-spanning, not quite conspiracy, not quite business, thing of unimaginable complexity and power. Most of the folks working for the organization are totally brainwashed. They are working for the cause, they are completely committed, this is the way forward for humanity, this is the thing. They're working towards... becoming clear, or the Human Instrumentality Project, or something. If we combine the two, I think it's about perfect.
They are true believers in whatever the thing is.
The thing, whatever the thing, the great ideal, the stuff they're moving towards. Consequently, they don't think out of the box very well, and the support staff haven't been exposed to the same level of thorough brain scrubbing, just so they can help people around. Maybe they tried this before and it didn't work so well. They're not, these clearly aren't the political orthodoxy folks. These are just helping people fix day-to-day problems. The thing is, the folks on the help desk, who are generally, from my experience, lovable miscreants and many, many special snowflakes of many infinite variety reside in IT help desks and the like. And that's probably true of every job, but I've just seen quite a variety in my time. Because they have the answers to the people, the poor goofs who call up. They establish this sort of this feeling of superiority. Because, you know, these clueless people don't know how to make the printer load or something like that. The thing is, you come to realize in your role that, you know, the glorious new dawn, the awakening of whatever's going on, well, it's right around the corner. And putting the pieces together from, you know, helping people with the fact that their calendars have no appointments after a certain date. And, you know, there's all sorts of advisory things going out and there's lots of preparations for a particular time and meetings being set up. Nothing after it. The whatever is coming is going to be either huge disappointment or Armageddon.
Uh-huh.
And your contract hasn't been renewed yet.
Which is the bad bit.
Which is the bad bit. It's time to save the world.
So you're saving the world in order to keep your job?
No, you'll probably be fired as well, but...
You're saving the world in order to save the world. Okay.
You're saving the world because all your stuff is there. Plus, you've inadvertently you've inadvertently shepherded these people towards doing a what was that UFO cult?
Heaven's Gate?
Yeah, something doing like a global Heaven's Gate.
Oh my.
You know, you even if you are working on a help desk, you might feel a little bit guilty about that.
I know I would.
So, and you know, partially it would be kind of like a paranoia-esque inside kind of gag kind of thing. You know, stuff like, never tell anyone your eldritch dream name. Esoteric support will never ask you for that.
Like it.
And so you have a cross between sort of like Scientology as actually run by Aleister Crowley, with the backing of the folks who built the Avers.
Right.
Part of it's inspired by listening to the podcast Ono, Ross and Kerry actually do Scientology, which, and they're still free apparently and not sued yet, so that's pretty good.
Woo!
Which is fascinating. The way that Scientology works is really interesting. It's mostly language, and being really insistent seems to be their thing. It's quite fascinating. But yeah, the idea that coming from suddenly you realize that, well, you're on call next week, but that's not such a big problem because the world's probably going to have ended by that point.
Unless you do something about it, in which case you're on call.
There's a real moral depth to that.
Indeed. See, I can't tell whether it's a win-win or a lose-lose. See, if you don't save the world ends. If you do save the world, you're on call.
Exactly. That's the real complexity, the moral texture of the question.
I do remember that from a Babylon 5 episode, where because the station was under threat, the commander scheduled a, I think, dock union meeting for after the deadline. On the grounds that if the threat eventuated and destroyed the station, at least he wouldn't have to go to that meeting. And so the last shot is just him wishing for the merciful release of death at that meeting.
Well, yes. And I think we've covered this all around before with, you know, the Minions type games where the people within the Evil Geniuses organization suddenly realize, you know, it's not in their best interest, nor was it probably ever in their best interest to work here.
So in this case, you've got... I kind of like it. I mean, it's obviously a short-run game. I don't know whether it's a one-shot, but it's a mini-series rather than a campaign. I'm getting the idea.
It depends on where you put the climaxes. I mean, you could break out and discover that, you know, woohoo, you saved the world. All these people who are extremely angry with you are still alive.
Ah.
It depends how you feel about going from there.
Okay, any thoughts as to system?
Not particularly. Depends on... Let your heart be your guides, probably.
Yeah. I would want something that allowed for a certain amount of bullshittery, because, I mean, one of the advantages of help desk is that you can get away with some of the most ridiculous excuses for doing things and reasons for being places.
True.
So I can see that being quite useful in fending off the upcoming whatever, sort of a, oh, don't mind us, we're just here to defragment the framnambulators.
Yeah, I think there would be a high. I think that would probably be more important than having the characters' technical qualifications actually nailed down. I think that would probably be a. It's possibly one of those things which, rather than being like an individual PC's stat, it'd be something that everyone has to a degree. It would actually be something a universal ability that people just approach differently.
Yeah, so you all already have all of those technical. Esoteric technical skills, that's just a given.
To a degree, yeah. I mean, you'll specialise in maybe...
Fate Accelerated, maybe?
Yeah, Fate Accelerated, describing people's strengths and weaknesses in various things, but the bullshitting people that you're supposed to be pulling this thing apart would be one of those core kind of things.
Yes, why are you just disassembling the Doomsday Accumulator? Are we getting some weird resonant feedback from the tertiary crystals? Sure.
You know, part of the thing would be initially that while they've been helping folks, you know, set up their diaries and, you know, making sure their email works properly, they haven't been involved directly in any of the freaky stuff. So initially what they've got to do is they've got clear indications that, you know, after next Tuesday, it's all over.
So the first step is figuring out, okay, why?
Why? What has happened? Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Hmm.
See, it's now making me kind of mentally recast the movie Triple X and just imagining the circumstance of if the anarchist slash terrorist group had had an IT support division who suddenly notices, hey, we've got like no meetings or anything after this date. I wonder why. Does anybody know about this missile firing boat project? What is that sub there? What is that missile? Oh, that doesn't look good.
Yes.
So rather than being heavily muscled, adventure, thrill-seeking criminal guy involved in things, it's the IT support. Okay, yeah.
And it does beg the question where these evil geniuses in movies get the legions of highly motivated minions, because your stated objective is starting, you know, global nuclear war. What is your 401k like at that point? What's going to happen to your retirement planning? It's like,
I mean, possibly the idea there is that you're signing up on the grounds that your investment accounts got completely wiped out by the global financial crisis. You've got bills up the wazoo. You owe hundreds of thousands in student debt that you're never going to be able to pay back. But if you sign up with these guys and they're successful, the entire economy collapses, as does the population, and you don't have to pay any of it back. It's effectively you're trading your way out of crippling debt.
Right.
It is your retirement plan.
Yeah, fair enough.
Your retirement plan is everybody else dies.
Yeah, I'm fairly confident that there's more likely to be a zombie apocalypse before I can afford a mortgage. So yeah, I see the appeal there. I'm fairly sure that they was dead when we got here. Reasoning works pretty well.
How did you, officer? These young people just turned up and started killing themselves all over my property. Okay, so yeah, that is. I would actually kind of like to play in that one if you felt like running a Fate accelerated game at some point.
I can think of sort of a Fate pamphlet for playing surly help desk people. I'm sure they will have wide application.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm assuming that for most role-playing groups, it's just a look to that surly help desk guy you know. Or gal. Because you do.
There's a chance. There's a very strong chance. Cool.
All right. Should we go over onto one of the audience suggestions?
Absolutely. You've been prowling the foreye?
That sounded wrong, but yes. Yes, I have.
Okay.
People have suggested things.
Things?
And stuff.
Excellent.
And in one case, written a novel. Wow. Okay. I'm going to file this one into the category of Craig really needs to pre-record stuff. Okay. So this one comes to us from Trigger Happy 938. It's on the long side, but it's also on the good side. So, here's my idea. The players are Shadowrunners, having to hit an As Technology branch research office. The basics of the run, as presented to the team by the Johnson, is a pretty run-of-the-mill data steal for some research As Technology have been doing into fetish crafting, but are complicated by the specifics of the way this branch office is run. The office is small, and the Azzies have posted minimal armed security to try to mask the importance of this branch office, but because of the high value of the data on site, the tech support guy is both a solid decker and a highly competent spider rigger. For clarification, for those not familiar with the term, which includes Craig, a spider rigger is somebody who rigs into a building security the same way a drone rigger controls drones or a vehicle rigger controls their car, meaning this guy's brain is literally plugged into all of the security cameras and door controls. Worth still, if an alarm is raised on site, off-site security conjurers will summon many nasty spirits who will travel at speed of thought to the office, be let in by the security rigger, and will generally do bad things to the runner's anatomies. The support office also houses a wage mage working magi support. He spends his shift doing regular astral protection sweeps, looking for magic things that shouldn't be there, and the rest of his time answering staff questions. Fortunately, the Johnson has the address of one of the three people who will take shifts at this job. To hit the office successfully, the team will need to intercept the spider on his downtime, get access to his keycard, keys, passwords, get access to the tech support office, and disable the on-shift support staff. At that point, so long as nobody realizes that anything is wrong and raises an alarm, it should be a milk run, as the team's decker should be able to get at the necessary files from the tech support matrix terminal. Of course, this presents a few unique challenges. In order to maintain the illusion that nothing is going wrong, one or more runners is going to need to serve as tech support as calls roll in. If the team only has one decker, he's going to have to split his attention between trying to break into systems he does not have authorization for and dealing with office drones who mistook the optic drive in their workstation for a cup holder. Conversely, the party is also going to have to field questions from people doing magic-related research, oftentimes having equally dumb questions. I'm liking this.
Yeah, this is...
deeply cynical.
And also throwing Shadowrunners into a place they are not normally comfortable being helping
indeed.
People.
As the run proceeds, the questions start to point to the sort of crime against humanity research that as technology is prone to get down to behind closed doors. One lab needing files sent over on cybermancy rituals, another needing an ETA on human test subjects, things of that nature. This raises a series of concerns for the runners. Keeping up the ruse will likely mean being at least remotely complicit on some horrid going-ons. The runners might be able to make a tactical strike to stop some of this, free captives, and generally disrupt operations, but doing so would put them at great personal risk. These also point to a much bigger possible payday if they get the files on the research that is being performed currently. Unfortunately, large chunks of it is still either in writing or on personal terminals not directly connected to the Matrix network, which would mean going to get it. Also, whatever that research is, should be appropriately horrible so that any runners with a moral compass, does that happen? will have misgivings about simply selling it to another corp to be used. Conversely, if the team want to be whistleblowers, their risk will have very little payoff, and depending on how they go about it, could draw some very bad attention from a corporation for whom blood magic is standard operating protocol.
Very nice. And there's some extra suggestions down here, which I think will direct people onto the thread for.
Yeah, I will put in a link because they're actually pretty fun.
Yep.
And people should read them and say nice things to trigger happy as a result.
Exactly. Troll-sized keyboard.
Yeah.
Cool. I like that. It is a lovely twisted twist on Shadowrun. And yes, if you get the calls misrouted, suddenly you've got the street samurai trying to answer magic questions and the shaman trying to answer questions about people having trouble with their printer. That would be suitably hilarious.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun. I can't decide whether I'd want to do that kind of beer and pretzels playing it a little bit for laughs or because I am just imagining your standard armor-bedecked, weapon-encrusted shadow running troop attempting to blend in. So they've sort of got this outfit and then they've got the collared, short-sleeved white shirt with tie just kind of over the top of it, trying to blend in.
They may not be blending in physically. The IT Morlocks don't go out much anyway, so they might be quite, as long as they sneak in, they're probably okay. But just having the odd interaction while they're doing all their tense shadow running and stuff and like trying to deal with somebody with some inane question at the same time, I think that would be an interesting contrast. The level of comedy would need to be entirely appropriate to your game.
I would definitely want somebody to come down and knock on the door because the coffee maker is on the fritz and they know all about computers, so they must know how to fix a coffee maker, right?
Good comment from real life. I noted the other day that the coffee maker at work correctly pluralized one espresso to espressi.
Dude.
Yeah, I know. Most pretentious thing I've ever heard. So yeah, by the time you get round to the whenever the hell Shadowrun is set, yeah, that's not inappropriate.
I just like the idea. Okay, essentially because I've had that conversation. Because I've had at a workplace somebody come along and ask if I can fix the coffee machine because I was kind of the default or one of the two default IT guys. I mean, what was actually broken was that somebody had switched it over onto the I wish to put steam into something and then wandered away.
Yes. The number of times working as I do in a telecommunications company with engineers with decades more experience than I have with much more complicated roles, people being confused by the fact that grounds tray is filled up.
Yes.
It's terrifying.
Yeah, actually, I got nothing. So I would definitely want to put that in there.
Yeah.
In fact, my major difficulty with this game would be not using it as a way of putting in everybody who I wanted to shout at throughout my previous career. The whole, my computer's doing something weird and has brought a box up on the screen, which sounds pretty bad. That sounds like something odd is happening. Turns out the box was a dialogue box and it had text in it, but he didn't bother mentioning it. because that's clearly beyond the abilities of a lawyer to read things.
It's not his job.
Apparently not, no. Yeah, it's kind of a, wait, you're warranted to speak to the environment court, but you can't report accurately on what is in front of your own eyes.
Yes.
Really?
I think whatever level of catharsis is healthy for your group is also appropriate, but yes. Thank you, Trigger Happy. You're a sick, sick individual, but that is awesome.
It is entirely possible that it would turn into a game where the party decide, okay, Decker, you grab the information. We're going to go and hunt down these people because they do not deserve to live.
Yeah, okay. These things are terrible, but for the moment, we're just going to go splash around the gene pool for a bit because these people are just messing with us.
Yeah, and I do like the idea of the street samurai trying to pretend to be IT and sort of a, yeah, I can totally fix the coffee machine. You may want to stand back, though. Pumps a couple of shots into it. There you go. Tray's empty. Wonder, 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 wonder.
Coffee spills out in front, yes.
Yeah, just spewing steam and smoke and sparks everywhere. Sort of a, wow, those guys need a vacation.
Mm. All right, cool. We have one from Taz. Esoteric support. That sounds like my day job. Yep, I know that feel. For the specialists at Global Solutions, it's a little more complicated. Some people hear voices. Lucky them. You've got Edgar Allan Poe on one shoulder and General MacArthur on the other, both trying to give you advice how to change a baby demon's diaper. General Solutions' motto is, no job is too big or too small. GS's Elite Trouble Division adds, or too weird. The players work as troubleshooters for the GSTD. You could be a plumber, a cabbie, or maybe an out-of-work college grad. But you also have a special gift of multiple personality gestalt. This is not the same as multiple personality disorder. You're in control, sort of. Each player has their normal character skills and traits, but they can tap into the skills and knowledge of personality implants, either permanent or replaceable within sessions. The kicker is that these personalities are controlled by the players to the left and right of you. Yes, this is intended to be a light-hearted and rules-light game of much wackiness. After all, when you are called to settle a high-powered negotiations with Hitler and Gandhi as your advisors, you might have to do a little internal negotiating with yourself first. Systems. Yeah, quags will do the job quite nicely. As to which additional personalities you have, I like the chaos a random table can provide. Something like those lovely D66 tables from Maid. Each personality had a short list of qualities and flaws that they could permanently grant the player to make their life easier or harder. Of course, the personalities know about each other and might vie for who has the best advice. Or they could just be a distraction. Imagine Marilyn Monroe and JFK sneaking off behind your head. Wowee. That's cool. That's like Better Angels meets everyone is not Raymond.
Everyone is John?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I do have a soft spot for games where the players to either side of you have some bearing on your character's actions and or personality and traits and that kind of thing. I do kind of like those games.
Yeah, I'd like to see a little mechanical thing where that, say, each player has a, maybe like with the Everyone is John, where each of the personalities has some sort of currency where they go, oh, let's do this, and they kind of try and bribe you.
Actually, Quags has that.
Ooh.
Because Quags has yum-yums.
True. Yes. You might want to shape it a little so that you get... So while you're Einstein, you get your special adjunct personality ones where you can go, I want him to do this. Ooh, I really want him to do this. And the mechanism would be interesting to work out. But whatever they take to take the action, the other person is rewarded to their general pool.
I was kind of imagining that each player would have sort of three bowls in front of them. There's the sort of the center one that is, that's the character.
Mm.
The one to the left and the one to the right are for that personality.
Yeah, and whatever. Sort of, if the outcome, say, favors Gandhi or something, you get to empty the Gandhi bowl into yours at the end of that sort of the discussion or the negotiation. So it's like, yeah, I'm definitely going with Gandhi. Boop. Like, this got Skittles, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that would take a little bit more piecing together, but I like the idea that there is sort of you incentivize, and that the person playing that character should get a bit of a kickback as well. So playing to that character and being convincing should be part of it.
That's why I'm thinking the yum yum bowl thing, because even if the person playing Gandhi ends up playing Marilyn Monroe next time, for the person to their right, for example, they still have access to that previous pool of yum yums. I mean, I kind of like the idea of various times with a bit of a trade-off between the left and right person, with sort of a, I think we should do this. I shouldn't we do that? I'll give you a yum yum to back down on this one. Okay. I just cut the player out entirely. That would be as funny as hell.
That would certainly be interesting. You want to think about the economics a bit of it, but no, that's a really cool idea. It's like everyone is John.
Yeah, Shades of Herman's Head.
Yes.
Now that would be brilliant con game territory.
Absolutely.
And yeah, if you can't sell that one at a con game, I will show you a sad, sad bunch of role players at a con.
Indeed, and
One of
possibly
whom
hung.
might be me.
Awesome.
That's kind of awesome. Yeah, Quags, aside from maybe tweaking the economy, which you could really only do by playing it and seeing what went wrong, Quags has pretty much everything you need with that yum yum mechanic just there.
Well, that's normally like a one-to-one kind of thing. This one needs probably a little bit of a bidding system kind of worked into it. But apart from that, yeah, I think that's a good grounding for it.
Okay, I mean, admittedly, I've run a handful of Quags sessions and played in like four games total, but with most of them, there was a certain amount of, I would really like to do this thing, a waggly yum yum, sort of, I'm sure you would, but you're not getting it for one of those. There's a certain amount of back and forth going on. But yeah, that, yes, I really like that one.
Yeah, no, that is freaking awesome.
Okay, so shall I do the last one, which is comes to us from Kitamono. And in fact, because all of these are from the same forum thread, we have, I like Taz's take on esoteric support. I, on the other hand, have a different take. And looking up the word in my thesaurus, it had the following example of esoteric. In attendance were more than 50 antique dealers brimming with esoteric knowledge. Tying in the old Ian McShane Lovejoy series and the concept of what an esoteric antique dealer would be like, we have a game of an antique dealer who's a divvy, i.e. has a sixth sense about antiques and can tell the difference between authentic and fake antiques, and who, with his assistance, deals with the supernatural that haunts the antiques of the British nobility. Not all of the spirits are ghosts, nor all of the nobles very noble. The team is also looking to improve their finances in finding that Elizabethan serving tray that's haunted by a servant from the 18th century and is used as the dog's dish. The system I would use would be inspectors, as it's minimal and perfect for this kind of adventure. Since inspectors revolves around how much money you have to fund your operations, it's perfect for the sort of game where you're trying to make that find and make a lot of money from the finder's fee you get. Of course, you're too honest and above board to cheat your client. This kind of reminds me of Read or Die.
Yeah, it does a bit. Yeah, in this context, esoteric just means hidden something. It's like the difference between what the Greek philosophers talked about indoors rather than what they in their public sort of statements. So it could be anything kind of concealed, but definitely, yeah, the read or die, the genetically engineered figures from history who somehow had superpowers based on the discoveries or artistic contributions they'd made.
Yes.
Loopy anime movie.
Occult librarians.
Yeah. The follow-up series wasn't as gripping, but it was fairly interesting. But yeah, the movie is a must-see for just the crazy things they do with paper.
Yeah, inspectors, from my extremely limited experience of one session run by Ben,
Yeah, that could definitely work.
and haunted artifacts, because why not?
Indeed, and Ian McShane, and if you're going to invoke a spirit who did Deadwood and is going to be Mr. Wednesday in the upcoming American Gods, that's no bad thing.
Oh,
He was somebody grizzled in Game of Thrones, but I think they've started to go through all British actors that there ever was.
Well, it's a big cast, at least at the start.
Indeed it is. Oh no. So IMDb had noted he is in Game of Thrones, but he's not in Game of Thrones yet.
Oh. Well, I mean, Game of Thrones has a churn rate like a big box store or a supermarket.
Yes.
It goes through them. at a rate. Yeah, that would be fun. Also, it's nice to note that there are people who aren't me who do the thing of, I've got no ideas, let's just Google the individual words and see what comes up.
Hmm. Inspiration is where you find it. That's all good.
All right. Well, that was the ideas. Thank you very much, Trigger Happy, Taz, and Kitamono.
Indeed.
For some pretty damn fun ideas. I'm kind of glad I stole that comment of Chris's.
You should probably give it back to him now.
Yeah, I'll give him the card or something. It'll all work out.
That's how these things work, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. So, yeah. Hope you all enjoyed that.
Excellent. And so, we got some updates for our adoring public waiting for news that we've been dropping just completely useless, vague hints about.
We'll be trying not to be vague so much as not actually having too much in the way of plans. But yeah, I'm assuming we're referencing the Craig travel plans?
Indeed.
Okay.
It's not like I've got any plans. God.
Well, I know you abhor travel and, to a lesser extent, the outside world.
It's basically vacuum with, you know, some other bits.
Right. Yeah, vacuum, but with an atmosphere and trees.
Well, it tapers off to vacuum eventually. You've got to watch that.
That is technically true, yes.
And by proportion, it's mostly vacuum.
Okay, yes, I see where you're going with this. Yes, you are accurate that the world outside of your house, proportionally, is almost a vacuum. From a very specific point of view.
Yes, almost entirely devoid of interest.
Yeah, almost entirely devoid of interest, and yeah, really has a bunch of hydrogen and some other contaminants.
Indeed.
In little clusters.
So you venture out into this basically gigantic void and doing some stuff.
Yes. Yes, the basic plan, such as it is that I'm going to be spending April and May seeing a bit more of New Zealand than I already have. Much of the South Island I have never seen, and the bits of it that I have had a major earthquake since then. So it's probably changed a bit. So I'm going to be spending a couple of months doing that. So with a bit of luck, there will be at least a couple of recordings from the road, as it were, or more accurately, from the Net Cafe or Backpackers or Hotel Lobby on the road.
The road might be noisy, you know.
Indeed.
Again, relatively speaking.
And then at the start of June, well, actually at the middle of June, we'll be heading off to the United Kingdom for about a month and a half. And then at the end of July, I will be heading to the US to go to Gen Con and then do some traveling around the aforementioned United States of America until probably about the middle of October, at which point I expect I will have run completely out of money and will head back to the UK.
Where things are cheaper, presumably.
Oh, God, no. But I can legally work in the UK.
Yeah.
I cannot do this in the US.
So, there'll be recordings from the road, and there'll be recordings from the other side of the road, you monsters, and then back on the right side of the road.
Nice. Hadn't even thought of that one. Yeah. I've never driven in the US, so I've ridden in cars in the US, but it's not really the same.
Fair enough.
Yes, so that's the current plan. Much of this hinges on some currently untested assumptions as to whether I actually like traveling with no particular plan in mind, because I've not really done that before. Whether I am the sort of person who can stay at a backpacker's hostel and not hate everyone and everything around it and in it.
And if you don't, I can do that for you.
So you're thinking I could just outsource my hating of everyone and everything?
Indeed. So while you're having a thoroughly wonderful time and having your mind broadened and seeing sights, I can, you know, just sort of take over the responsibility of grumbling at everything and complaining that the food's the wrong, I don't know, density or something.
That's fair. Particularly with baked goods. I mean, that's tricky to get.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, well, that's quite useful, because then when, as, for example, happens, one of the people who was in the room at the backpackers comes in at 3 in the morning, vomitingly drunk, and you have to wake up and deal with them to make sure that they don't choke to death, and I wish I was not recounting the tale of somebody who I know who recounted this yesterday. You can outsource, you can take care of the absolutely hating them and wanting to kick them a bit. That
sure.
Would be terribly convenient.
Unfortunately, I can't take care of the choking them for you, but oh well.
I'm not sure what you do in that context. I mean, there's the recovery position, which I guess is the sensible thing to do, though the idea of just taping them face down to a plank over a toilet so that they drain would seem to be a sensible approach, but is probably a bad move.
Is shaving or half shaving and mailing somewhere still an option? Or
I think technically that's referred to as kidnapping and trafficking in human misery.
All right, or a bachelor party, one or the other.
Yeah, I mean, I'm working on the theory that smuggling somebody into a country is bad.
Mm-hmm.
Smuggling them out of it logically is probably also bad, if only because you're smuggling them into somewhere else.
Yeah, it's one of those things. You can't really not have done the one without the other unless you're on Sealand or somewhere like that.
Yeah, but at that point, it's less smuggling them out of the country and more you are marooning them in international waters to die.
Yes.
Well, which admittedly is a different crime, but arguably a worse one.
I don't know how micronations actually handle that sort of thing, people, you know, leaving their borders.
Most of the time for micronations, at least terrestrial micronations, it doesn't matter because the country they're surrounded by doesn't acknowledge their existence.
Or is completely unaware of their existence despite best efforts.
That is true.
Ah, well.
Yes, I mean, there was the micronation of Lovely, which existed inside one guy's flat in England.
Mm-hmm.
So presumably the national border was also the front door.
It must have been. It was also a checkpoint, which is kind of convenient, that one.
Hmm. Yeah, do you have your passport? I've got my key. Yeah, good enough.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, see if you can visit Lovely while you're there, because, you know, it sounds nice.
It's all in the name, really.
Yes.
So, yes, we are obviously blissfully unaware of what the knock-on effects of my travelling will do to the podcast. My hope is that it will lead to ideas from the road that are infused with the spirit and history and culture and ambience of where I happen to be. Or they could end up infused with the spirit and culture and history and ambience of yet another grotty backpackers.
Indeed.
Time will tell.
Hopefully, yeah, the recording sessions will not be punctuated by gastrointestinal distress and tales of lost luggage.
I'm hoping not too much of that. But as you can tell from my tone of voice, I can't necessarily rule it out. And I'm not planning at this stage to go anywhere that is famous for gastrointestinal distress. I mean, there are cities in the world that have actual gastrointestinal conditions named after them. None of them are on the list yet. And I'm not sure I want to be the guy who podcasts from some kind of horrible lavatory with associated noises, and I'm hoping heavy background noise filtering, because nobody needs that.
I have read very few travel books, but they have always got the chapter about being imprisoned in a shitter for a couple of days because of something like that. Maybe I'm just focusing on the negative aspects, but they're always in there.
I do have one sitting on my bookcase right now where it's an omnibus edition of three different books by the same guy, but one of them does start with the story of being in business class on a plane with most of the other guys from the drilling rig that he was on. All of them have got IVs plugged in because it's a medical evacuation because somebody bought some dodgy bottled water. And as the plane is in takeoff and the sort of the real G-force of takeoff hits, that's when his system decided to let go.
Naturally.
And so there is this plane that is taking off at a steep angle, and he is trying to stagger to the bathroom with his trousers tucked into his socks because he thought this might happen.
That's thinking forward. That's
indeed, yeah. That's thinking with gravity. So yeah, it may be that it's just what happens. Every good travel book needs a poopin' scene, apparently.
Indeed. Okay, so we might section that off to some sort of side project.
Yeah. vote for not calling it the Poopcast.
Lavatories of the World. Maybe.
Maybe.
If it hasn't already been done.
I think there's either a Singaporean or a Hong Kong community lavatory beautification group.
Oh.
I saw a little news piece on them at one point where they basically will visit and clean up and beautify various public lavatories and then sing little songs to kind of honour the occasion.
Marvellous.
Yeah.
If you're going to hit the Hundertwasser toilets in Northland, you could start a little tour of the most sort of like culturally, artistically significant lavatories in the world.
Now,
it's an angle.
It is an angle.
It's a shitty
this
angle.
Is the point. Nice. I will attempt to track down a link for it. When I went to the UK in 2014 for the World Science Fiction Convention in London, I attended a late night. It wasn't really a panel or a presentation. It was kind of a combination of a presentation and a bit of a chat by somebody who did tours of public lavatories and associated septic works, I believe under the business name of Doing Your Business.
Right. That's...
So it's an industry, apparently.
Yeah. It's not exactly adventure tourism, or maybe it is.
It's certainly very historic. I mean, London, one of the founding places of, for want of a better phrase, sanitary history.
Oh, yeah.
But that is perhaps for another time and for another podcast. And we'll see what happens there.
Mm.
So that you're now as up to speed as we are, listener, as to what the heck the plan is.
So look forward to that, whatever it is.
To as much as you are able. And
so
I'm kind of looking forward to trying to do podcasts from the road and bring in as much local colour as seems reasonable.
And, you know, we may struggle for a more short form version, considering the venue and the internet connections, because, you know, we just did basically 10 minutes of toilet jokes, so I don't think we're missing anything there.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping you'll edit that down to, as it were, just the nuggets.
Just the fundamentals, yes.
Yes, just the fundamentals. No, I couldn't resist. Stop judging me.
Never.
All right. So thank you again for listening, listener. Our next episode will be dropping on the 16th of April, New Zealand time. So almost everybody in the world gets it a little bit earlier than that.
Lucky you.
It will be episode 73, and the prompt comes from Taz and just reads ... again.
That's just freaking ominous. So
I believe it came from something along the lines of, do not invent Skynet again.
Fair enough. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we will see you next time.
Good night.
Good night.
Want to hear more of our shenanigans? Then go to hoarde.net and click on the button that looks like a couch. The Big Red Couch is released under Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported from creativecommons.org. All music on the show comes from the album Universal Fluff Theory by Krakatoa. Visit them at krakatoa.com or follow the link from our page. See you next time!